This is RSBNB Update, episode 626, Unfinished Business, an Old Release Strategy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, Tannis and Mr. Bistro are here for their last week covering Menophos, the Magister, and everything in between, it would seem. We're doing a little bit of temporal displacement here with this week's podcast because we have a huge news event in terms of RuneScape news that broke Friday afternoon. And for those of you guys who pay attention, Friday afternoons are when the podcast is edited and put out, so it'll be a little bit late this week. So we are going to insert this segment at the beginning of the show because that's just how massive it is. And I think I've only ever done this once before on the podcast. Only once. So that's the kind of situation we're in right now. But glad to have you guys back.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. All right, so we're shocked. This episode is going to be a episode filled with wide open mouths that are dropping, because this week we saw that the behind the scenes video was postponed, and this Friday, July 7th, we get a news posting entitled "Unfinished Business Release Strategy Update." So we're graced with Maud Osborne's appearance here, in which he is talking about what the RuneScape release schedule is going to look like going forward. And suffice to say, after Menophos, there are going to be some huge changes here. So to get us off started here, Osborne says that they've been in discussion at JAGX for about the last month and been listening to feedback about Menophos and a few other updates. The focus on Menophos and the determination to put it out and have it ready for a release at a specific time has led to a neglect of a few other game updates. I think we have discussed this in the past, haven't we?
Yeah, it's the update schedule was kind of lacking.
Right.
We all anticipated it was for the release of this.
And that's how it would have been going forward, but JAGX has had some huge discussions over the past week, and it's led to this major change. So they continue on and say, many have liked or even loved Menophos, but, quote, it's fair to say that it's had its problems. We underestimated how much of our focus it would take up, and we've neglected other updates as a result. It's clear that regular updates is something that makes RuneScape RuneScape. The game feels less alive without them. I was utterly shocked to hear this, and I personally agree with the sentiment, but we'll talk more about what we think of this as a whole macro view of this update in a moment. Then Maud Osborne gets to the huge bombshell of this, because you guys will recall at last year's RuneFest, they touted this move to expansions and focus on expansion-style updates. All development on future expansions has been suspended. And that is what is the huge news today, is that all development on future expansions in RuneScape has been suspended. So that means we're going to be going back to a different kind of release structure. I'm assuming as soon as July and August. So this is huge. And along with this, they have doubled the number of developers and testers on the Ninja team. So you'll be seeing more updates like the Quick Prayers, the Dyes, and the Aura Bag in the coming months. Also, on polls, they say while they're flawed, they work. Polls are coming back in a big way. The plan is that we pull as many of our updates, fixes, or improvements as we can. Now, I'll save what I'm going to say on polls until just a little bit later and further on later in the podcast about the poll reset this week. But further discussion in this news posting here goes to discuss the update cycle, and they're calling it unfinished business. For the foreseeable future, the Eternals and Titans will be delivering updates that have been promised in the past. They will be finishing updates that feel unfinished and improving the core of the game. Think area reworks rather than new areas, and continuation of old quest lines rather than new ones. Achievements in Invention Batch 2 are part of these updates, and 10 updates that Jagex is actively working on or researching at this time include the bank rework, mining and smithing, the clue scroll overhaul, daily scape reductions, Invention Batch 2, finishing the achievement system, the Evil Dave quest, graphical reworks including Sears Village and the Witch's House, combat pets, Shattered World improvements to make it more rewarding and varied. The first progress report on this new release schedule will be released on July 28th and regularly thereafter. And they're going to get started this Tuesday, July 11th, with a big RuneScape survey, which will prioritize the release of these updates for the community. All right. So what do we got with this? Because, I mean, obviously this is a huge reversal in terms of what Jagex has been talking about and been promising for a long time. And the reaction to Menafos, I think, kind of sealed the deal on expansions. So let's start with you, Tanis. What do you think? What was your first reaction when you saw this?
WTF. And I'm still spinning. I don't. There's so much, and I gotta be quick. If this should have happened when they were deciding what the future was going to be, this should have came in that time between deciding and then the expansions. Like, this should have been like over the spring, maybe, you know. From if that's what they want to do, I'm all for cleaning the game up. I'm all for that. But this just makes them look terrible. I don't know what the hell they're thinking. I still personally believe that expansions are the future. Unless they're not capable of doing it. And maybe they're not.
He hit on the key point right there. Everyone would love to do expansions, and everyone would like to have expansions. But if you do that, you take too many resources away, and it doesn't feel like RuneScape anymore. It's a core business issue, and it's like a chicken and the egg scenario, right? Do you have expansions, or do you have RuneScape? You can't have both, apparently, as we found out. So,
but the... I'm worried about the way he explained it, though. I mean, okay, yeah, we have RuneScape. That's great. And yeah, we're used to weekly updates. Okay. But I find it hard to believe that we're going to get the kind of updates that we really want. I mean, it's going to be more Mickey Mouse stuff. I mean, yes, we're going to get ninja fixes. Yes, there's going to be quality of life fixes. Yes, there's going to be graphical updates. And all that needs to happen. But what about the big picture now? I don't know. I feel like we're adrift now. Like, I really feel like we're just adrift.
Well, we have been for a while because, I mean, I felt this way. And I think maybe you guys have. Correct me if I'm wrong. But it feels like, except for Menafos this year, there really wasn't much of a vision for this year and where the game is going. And, you know, this might be what they're aiming to fix with this huge live stream and the survey, because they did say polls will be back and polls will be back in a large way. And, you know, I can only think of one thing when it comes to this. I can think of the way that old school RuneScape is developed when it comes to that.
Yeah.
How about you, Mr. Bistro?
Well, this is definitely a shock. I ran upon it within minutes of it being dropped. I watched it on Facebook, like at work, and it blew me away. It made me a little bit angry because I'm still behind going for major expansions. But I don't think Jagex was lying when they said that this is the year of surprises. because this is probably one of the biggest surprises we'll get, and one of the surprises that people will either be happy about or not, that will define this year, probably. And I think that maybe they have a point that it doesn't feel like RuneScape when there aren't those major expansions. But if they're already saying they're doubling their developers and testers
in the Ninja team,
in the Ninja team, couldn't the Ninja team handle like the smaller kind of updates that we were used to back in the day, like the quick prayer presets, like when they released overloads or when they released just a small portion of new spells?
Right.
Like, I feel like those kind of small things, because there's enough areas in the game where they can work on that while there's big expansions. It doesn't have to be this like drought filled several months in between releases.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head right there, and that's what's been hitting me, because you know, not only is it, as a RuneScape player, there's nothing new to really look at each week aside from patch notes, it is the core essence of this podcast, as you guys know. Like I've joked before to you guys in pre-show, some weeks it would be easier to make up some fake news about RuneScape, but but when it comes down to it, there is no RuneScape content that has been being released in the time that Menafos was being developed. And I felt that. I know other people felt that. And for me, it was starting to feel like Maude Osborne said, it doesn't feel like RuneScape anymore. So from that side of this perspective, I'm incredibly happy that we're seeing a U-turn on this, because, you know, we tried the expansions with Menafos, and I mean, maybe a different expansion might have worked better. I don't know. That'll be something for Jagex to talk about, and maybe something for history to judge if expansions ever do come back. But at the same time, can you guys say that expansions in RuneScape as they are right now are providing a good game quality of life?
No, I don't think that they're providing a good quality of life. And that's why, okay, I'm saying, like, yeah, there didn't need to be that time of drought between these releases.
Right.
And if they could have gone back with a heavier number of ninjas, they could have done those smaller things that people really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Those things that have stuck to my mind from updates from years and years back that weren't that big. Like, that's totally in the realm of the Ninja team and things that they could have done.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, if they're doubling the size of the Ninja team and they're going to be focusing in on effectively cleaning up and, you know, tackling the unfinished business of RuneScape, I think that says a lot, because this year was supposed to be full of new expansions, but instead we're going back to the roots of RuneScape, and we're going to be, you know, I'm just going to read this one sentence again. Think area reworks rather than new areas, and continuations of old quest lines rather than new ones. How long has it been that people have been asking them to finish off the old quest lines before starting new ones? Or rework areas before adding, you know, entirely new areas to the map, when there's areas of the map right now that, you know, aren't useful at all to a good portion of the player base, right?
Right.
So I honestly think this is totally the right way to go after Menafos. I do think it's a little bit of a shame, though, that we don't get to experience expansions and a, you know, a fully developed and expansion that everyone liked when it came out, and an expansion that would really impact the game. It's unfortunate that we won't get to see what that looks like, but maybe, you know, they were saying Invention Batch 2 could have been a part of an expansion, for example. Maybe it's kind of that whole elite skill thing. Do we need an elite skill to add invention to the game?
I don't think they knew what they were doing, but I'm a little more pessimistic on this end, because these are things that should have happened. But if you do it right the first time, you don't have to go back and fix stuff all the time. You shouldn't have to go back and fix the achievement system. You shouldn't have to deal with Minute Falls for a month. Like, you shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And I've never been one that wants, I know it's RuneScape. I know it's weekly updates, but I've never been one for an update for update's sake. To me, that it just what because what do we get for that? We end up with Dailyscape, and we end up with go skill and gather some scraps of something. I'm really disappointed with this. Like, it needed to happen, but it should have happened before. Right now,
it should have happened a while back, actually.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's been so many updates that have come out that feel unfinished. The Ark, Shattered Worlds, Menaphos, you name it. All of these updates arrive and – oh, did I mention the achievement system? All of these updates arrive and they need to be looked at again, again, and again. And, you know, the community definitely lets Jagex know about this, and Jagex has been responsive thus far on that, and that is a great thing. And, you know, it ideally this should have happened after the Ark, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. But what I'm afraid of, what happens now? Do we just stagnate? Like, the players that play, are they just going to play, continue to play, do the same thing that they do every day, day in, day out? How much time does Jagex have to get this right before we get bored?
That's a very good question, because, you know, in a lot of ways, this is equivalent of two things. It's equivalent of, you know, getting sent out somewhere, sending out, say, a Navy destroyer, for example, on a 6-month mission. But 2 weeks into that mission, it gets called back because of a major change to Navy doctrine. That's one classic example of this, of what this would be. Another one of it is that we're inside of a house that is in need of repair, and we elect to focus in on the outside of the house to make it look better, add more, you know, curb appeal to it. And then in the meantime, you have to live inside of this house that has some leaky faucets, maybe some electrical switches that don't work properly. And you realize after you get a shock one day from this electrical switch that you need to live with the renovations and fix the house. So people are going to need to, I think, live with this for probably the next 6 to 8 months. As soon as some of these projects, you know, start getting ticked off the list. But I think where the direction and optimism will come in for players, if this is done correctly, big if there, and I'm more confident today than I was yesterday on this, because Jagex, of course, decided to reset the poll regarding the skill bets, and presumably they will learn from this and learn what options to set on polls going forward, is that if polls can be done clearly with a majority support and without bias, maybe we could get something great out of that.
I think a lot of what went into leading them to go for this, because you have to believe that they've been talking about this within the first week of release.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even before. But there's just been so much negativity. And I think if we were to go back and listen to ourselves in the past on this show, how many times we've talked about, like,
oh, believe me, I know. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I know how we feel. I listen to this and I hear this, and it takes a toll on all of us. You, Mr. Bistro, Tannis, Sirion, everyone who's been on the show over the last month is feeling it.
Yeah, it's just gotten so bad, and it's not just bad on RS3, it's bad in old school after a couple things went awry, which we don't need to get into that, but it's the negativity is bad. Jagex realizes this, and as soon as the player as soon as they start to bicker, that's the signs of a dying game and a dying fan base.
Well, just look what happened with EOC. EOC. Half the community was split on EOC, and it was because there was bickering in the community. Jagex didn't address it, and it just reached a breaking point. bot wars as well. People quit because of the bots. The bots were eventually vanquished. And I haven't said this on air, I don't think, but we're at a point where we are on the edge as a community, just like we were with EOC and just like we were with the bots.
And that feels so weird to me, because to me, those things were defined. There were defined positions. You saw it coming. You felt it coming. Now you feel it and you don't know what's going on. To me, there's nothing that is not defined. There are no, like, it just feels like something isn't right. Something's missing.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're at, you know what I mean? There's nothing to grab onto. There's no side to be on. You just feel lost. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I am in favor of this. As much as I want to see them do expansions, the poll system has worked really great in old school. All of my friends that are on old school, they love it. And as long as these polls are handled correctly and the input is coming from Jagex and not necessarily the players, I think we can see a little bit, you know, of Jagex getting back to themselves and making this game that they've been making for years the way they wanted to again. And it sounds like these polls will just be a priority, like,
determine which ones will come out when and whatnot. Because, we're not outright suggesting updates like we did with Rune Labs. We're going to be given options and we're going to choose which ones happen when. And I don't see a problem with that so much, because these updates are, you know, going to be well thought out, presumably by Jagex.
So, I mean, originally that's what the polls did. You know, that's how they decided. That's how we got Prif before Invention and all that. But, you know, I'm curious and almost a little surprised, because I didn't know that if you would come down that way, Shane. Because to me, I really don't know if we should be the ones prioritizing what their agenda is and what gets done.
You know, if you're making grand decisions and you're adding new stuff, then no, you shouldn't ask the players what kind of new stuff to be added based on an update title, a couple sentences, and maybe some concept art. No, we shouldn't let the players to decide that. It would be like the equivalent of asking what people want in the next version of Windows 10 or iOS, because only Microsoft and Apple can imagine that. But on the other hand, we have a list here of 10 tangible updates that we can see and we can prioritize. A bank rework, we know what that means. We know what the mining and smithing rework looks like. We know what a clue scroll overhaul would be. We know what Dailyscape is. We know what Invention is. We know what the achievement system is. We know Evil Dave. We know how graphical reworks look, and we know how pets work, and we know how Shattered World works. So if we're asked to prioritize these 10, the players can make a pretty good guess as to which of these they want and which will, in essence, elevate the community in that regard. Right now, if I had to pick my top two of these things that need to be fixed on here, of these top 10, it's the Mining and Smithing rework and Invention Batch 2, the two of the oldest ones.
For me, it would be Invention Batch 2, and it's not in the list, but it was mentioned in the video, the construction update.
Ah, yes. There you go.
I knew they were working on it. They have to be. They brought it up again. Like, it's just popping up all over the place.
Yeah.
Just when you least expect it.
So, I mean, ultimately, I think what this enables and what it means going forward for JX is a return to quintessential
normalcy.
A return to normalcy. There you go. You hit it on the head. Because, you know, it hasn't felt like our normal game since the tail end of last year when we swapped to one larger update a month and then patch notes, right? It hasn't felt the same since then. So
no, it hasn't.
I'll give you that. I mean, that's true. And I was willing to go with that for a while, because I've always said I would rather have them. I'd rather have a big update that was done right and wait, but I'm just not sure that's – I'm not sure that they're capable of doing that. Maybe this is – I mean, and it's not like – I don't mean that in a bad way, actually. I just mean, like, it's just not their style. Maybe, you know, what they did was what they do well and shouldn't have messed with it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I am worried. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. I'm a little worried with this.
All right. Mr. Bistro, you have anything else before we move on?
I don't think so.
All right.
I think we'll just have to see.
We'll just have to see what's on the survey, see what the progress report on the 28th of July looks like, and then strap in because we have no idea what the rest of the year looks like now. So
yeah. That survey is on Tuesday the 11th.
That's right.
If that wasn't mentioned before.
Yeah, Tuesday the 11th, going to be a big day. All righty. Well, let us move on to the Magister then, the final update in the Menaphos saga. Magister, of course, these are the keys that people have been gathering in the Slayer dungeon. You do need 115 Slayer to kill the Magister. You can do it with less, of course, boosting it with one of the Wilder Pies. So I believe that would take you down to 109. So that works. Also,
I used.
Oh, you did. Okay. What's your Slayer level right now?
I think I am 114. I'm either 113 or 114.
Okay. It's not too bad then. Not too bad. So this is inside the Sophonim Slayer dungeon, and you summon it with a Soul Obelisk. So how does this go for us, Tanis? What happens?
Well, when you start the fight, it's like any other fight, you know, in the beginning. People are having the best luck with a mage setup or range setup so that they can kind of keep moving. Think like legions, only you don't have to move quite as much as that. But as the fight goes on, it's where it gets tricky. It is more of a DPS type of a fight because you kind of have choices of whether to go after the Soul Obelisk and try to keep yourself from losing your constitution or just sticking on the Magister.
Right.
You know, spoiler alert, keep on the Magister. Because what happens is during the fight, he will summon like a Soul Obelisk, and that will take your constitution down. So your food isn't healing you as much as it would. So you need to have restores to offset that.
Do overloads work because overloads boost the constitution stat?
You know, I don't know about overloads.
They don't boost constitution.
I think it's the super restores is what I've been using. That's what everyone's been saying.
Yes, that makes sense because overloads don't affect the constitution level, so that wouldn't work. Hence why you want the restores.
Right. And so there's a couple other little mechanics you kind of have to watch out for. One is he'll throw a bomb. It'll do like 4K damage. Now, if you're close to, well, and you will get a message in your chat box that says like, you know, watch out or get out of the way. I don't remember what it says because frankly, I've never seen it. But you do get a message in your chat box when he's getting ready to throw this bomb. If you're standing by him and he throws the bomb and you can get away fast enough, it will damage him. So that's kind of cool, but more likely it's going to hit you if you don't run, and it does major damage. And remember, if you are tanking the Soul Obelisk, it doesn't take long for your constitution to get under 4K. That bomb goes off, boom.
You're dead.
It's a bad day for you. Okay. 800K down the drain, because that's what the keys are now. And then he also will spawn Imperial Guards, and he can spawn any style. So you might get lucky and it works to your advantage.
What level are the Imperial Guards?
What are they? Are they one?
Because if they're a good level below you, it should be fine. But
no, these ain't fine.
Okay.
The Imperial, they're 117 Slayer requirement. I can't think
of. Then you can't kill them if you're in there then.
Yeah, apparently they hit you pretty hard too.
Yeah, they hit hard. I don't know. I've always just tanked the Magister as quickly as possible. But there's something you have to watch out for, because if they go to your weak style, then you get hit really hard. And you can't you can't out eat all of this stuff that's happening.
Right.
You know, so that's it in a nutshell. The best strategy to use. Oh, and here's something really important. This boss is all about accuracy. You need to boost your accuracy as much as possible. His defense is super high, and he's got a lot of life points, but it's all about the accuracy. You want to use a Nihil. You want to use an accuracy-boosting aura, whether that be, you know, range or magic.
Conveniently named Runic Accuracy.
Right. Yeah. And just make sure that you're in the best – you get – best armor you can, like, you know, like you're perked out Serenic or Tectonic, something like that. I asked one of my friends if Void was an option. They're like, yeah, probably not, because of the amount of damage you take, because it does have a great accuracy bonus, you know, but not you just take too much damage in this fight. So accuracy is a big thing, and so you want to make sure that you can, like, you can hit, because you just can't afford to miss, essentially.
All right.
What weapons did you use? Yes. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, yeah, I got sidetracked. There's two situations. I'm going to tell you the best way that I've learned to do it through talking with people that have been doing this boss since it came out. And then I'll tell you what I tried. Things didn't work out so well for me, but, magic seems to be a very viable option. With your magic, you're going to want to take your super restores to help restore your constitution. Your best accuracy boosting auras, Nihils, that stuff. Your best armor. Take a Nox staff or a seismic. Both of those would be. Yeah, seismic wand and orb. Unless you're just a big baller and you can, you know, take the T92 staff, then more power to you.
Yeah, that, okay.
Yeah, so that is the, I mean, that's basically, and a lot of people are using a Guthic staff, because the Guthic staff has that, a spec on it that is an infinity spec, so that will take him down. And you can hit him a lot better with that. So that is something that people are taking to do a switch out. The other option, and I haven't heard of anybody really doing this effectively. No one's really doing melee, but Quake does have an infinity on with that ability. So you could try that. I wouldn't recommend it. But yeah, the Guthic staff has the infinity spec, and that will help you out a lot.
What does the infinity spec do?
It takes their defense down, all essentially.
Right. All right.
Yeah.
And of course, this is a solo boss, and if it wasn't a solo boss, you would have a whole host of other options of getting people to come in as debuffers and whatnot. But you can't do that.
No. And like in my situation, I went in with the best. I have better range gear than I do magic, so I tried both styles. But I had tier 90 in range, and I could not stay away from the bombs because in my situation, I couldn't see the message, and I didn't see it on the ground, and it was just boom, pop, dead. So that was bad. And it happened like three times, and I'm like, okay, I've lost enough money, you know, because like I said, the keys are 800K a pop.
Does sidestepping or sprinting or backstepping get you away from the damage of the bombs?
Yeah, you could probably surge away, or not the surge, but the range one. Yeah, you totally could probably do that. I just didn't see it on the ground. Like, I didn't see it happening, so I couldn't get out of the way.
All right. So let's talk about exactly what we're looking for drops here. So we get the tier 82 version of this weapon from the Slayer creatures, obviously. And the Magister is basically what allows us to convert this to the tier 92 version. So we're looking for, what are we looking for here for the drops?
Well, there's two layers of the of the special drop. So in order to make the tier 92 weapons, you need to have 3 blessings. In order to make a blessing, you need 100 scraps. In order to get the scraps, you have to get a drop. It's called a some kind of container that's holding the scraps.
Phylacterates or something. Yes. Along the lines. That's a very wide word to say.
Yeah.
Phylacteries. There we go.
And the way that that works is, so you have to get the phylacteries as a drop.
Right.
When you open that, there is an additional layer of RNG on how many scraps you're going to get. And, you know, something like, I think it's like 525, something like that.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's it's quite a spread there. So the RNG is really pretty harsh, and it can take considerable time to get enough of these scraps to make the weapons. And when you think, you know, I mean, 800K a pop, you can sink a lot of money into this really quickly.
Yeah, and I mean, it's early days for the boss, so people will obviously refine the technique to make kills more assured. But
do you think that the amount of time it takes to actually build this weapon would be in relation to building up the Ascension crossbows, or a little bit longer?
I think it's longer. The friends that I've been talking with about this have done a lot of Legions, and they say Legions is a lot quicker. So it's very similar, but I understand this. Like, I can't say that I like it, but because it's only a 2 or 3 minute fight for the average player, I mean, some players have gotten down to like a minute now, but for the average player, it's probably a 2 or 3 minute fight. And so that's rather quick. So they want the tier 92 to remain, you know, high and have a good value to it. So, I mean, I get it, but it's rough. It's rough if you're out there trying to make the weapon.
I would expect that those keys would drop to probably close to like 350, 400K over time. Maybe even a little bit lower to kind of get around where the keystones are from the Ascension Dungeon, because it is only 2 levels higher on the weapon.
Yeah, and I think that is going to be more of a function of how frequent the Slayer tasks are there, and just how many people can get them. Like, because I don't know what the drop rates are for the lower leveled mobs in there, and so you have to have a pretty damn high Slayer level to you know, to get the keys, or a lot higher. What's the Ascension creature? They're like 80s, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yep. To make a tier 90 crossbow.
Right. So, I mean, I guess this would be a little, I don't know, I would expect there to be a little less of these in the market, but I mean, I could be wrong. Market is not my strong point, so you guys probably know that better than me.
Yeah, and I mean, now, compare this to, say, a Zaros Godsword. So, that's the only other tier 92 melee weapon we have in game right now. So, with that being said, this is obviously the dual-wielding options for these. And I can see, probably in the long run, that, speaking from a market perspective, this will bring the tier 92 Godswords down a bit, probably, because I think the reason those tier 92 God Swords are so expensive is because they're probably not the most efficient thing to fight in God Wars Dungeon 2. Whereas if this is able to get itself refined down, it'll bring that entire tier of tier 92 weapons down a bit, hopefully. Not a huge amount, but maybe 10 to 15%.
Well, I guess it'll just depend on the how useful that special is on the Zaros God Sword.
I think that the price is so high on the current existing God Sword because there isn't a secondary option for tier 92.
Yep.
Yeah.
As soon as that starts to fill itself out,
You're going to see that. But I'd also like to bring one other thing in, is that right now, at least for melee, two-handed weapons reign supreme when it comes to area of effect abilities, because we don't really have that many AoE dual-wielding options. So if you're looking to do very quick Slayer, you're going to stick with something that's two-handed, and this isn't your thing, which I don't know. I mean, it seems as though people prefer the two-handed options, but that could just be my bias looking around.
No, but it's situational for like what boss you're fighting, or whether you're fighting doing Slayer, whether you're doing bossing, and then on top of that, what boss you're fighting. Because two-handed still have their DPS role. I mean, your dual-wield is still greater DPS on a single target.
Idealistically, yes. Like, but at the same time, like, it's still melee.
Yeah,
and I doubt that this weapon, along with the two-handed God Sword, is enough to make melee the style of choice. It's not, and I don't think it's ever going to be. I think melee is in trouble, and it's just the design of combat that makes it so.
I don't know. I think melee has a really high damage ceiling because you don't need ammunition.
Well, and I will.
Ammunition wise, we're stuck at tier 90 for magic spells and arrows. Whereas with melee, they just put out a new weapon at tier 92 and it's got the innate damage value of a tier 92.
Yeah, but you got to be so high in order to be able to switch to melee style if you want to take that bonus. Like,
oh, you mean to use it on everything?
Yeah, to use it on everything.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess that would make sense. I wouldn't use it on everything, but if I can use melee, I will, because I'll prefer that every time.
And then on top of that, like, I don't know how many people actually use tier 92 for Slayer tasks. Maybe it's different with higher level Slayer creatures now, but at least from my perspective, I wouldn't be spending my money with those weapons on Slayer tasks.
How about tier 90?
I would probably do tier 90.
Okay. All right, fair enough. We also got the Gloves of Passing, which are level 85 melee gloves. They have a special effect. After using Havoc, the damage of your next attack against the same target is boosted by 7%. So that's kind of interesting. Nice little synergy there with that ability. So anything else on the Magister mechanic-wise before we look at some of the other things it drops, as we talked about NPC drops last week?
No, I don't. I don't have anything else.
All right. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
Not really. Okay. The drops just really weren't that enticing. Like, even the Queen Black Dragon's drops, in my opinion, still look better than this. But
oh, there's lore journals also. They're guaranteed drops, and from the Magister over time, and these are required, of course, if you want the Master Quest Point cape. Forgot to mention that, though we did mention it in the behind the scenes.
Yes, that's right.
Other things on this drop table include Bird's Nest, 20 noted at a time, Crystal Keys, Dragon Stones, Dragon Arrowhead Tips, Dragon Plate Legs and Plate Skirts, Rune Plate Bodies, and now some of the things we were talking about as to drops that should be removed. Rune Bars, 8 at a time noted, 15 noted Ranner at a time, 15 noted Toad Flax, Corrupted Magic Log, Stack of 100, Weapon Poison, Water Talisman, Rune Battle Axe, and Standard Battle Staves in Stack of 15. So there's some questions here about how this would go in a potential drop table rebalance. I think the biggest offenders here would be the rune bars, the herbs, the logs, and maybe the battle staves. So, all right. And also, of course, the soul fragment, because you can apparently put the Magister in your Slayer dungeon, I guess. Was that why it would drop? Yeah, apparently it drops a soul fragment.
Huh.
Well, it does require Slayer to kill, right?
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. I guess. I don't know. I won't see an advantage, but I don't see a disadvantage either, so I don't know.
So, does that mean you can actually get assigned the Magister for a normal task? That doesn't sound
right.
Oh, wait,
yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Like, it'd have to be like a Reaper task.
Well, it's kind of like how you can put a Tormented Demon in your dungeon. I don't know, you can't get assigned Tormented Demons, can you?
I think you can.
Huh. Alright. Well, there's a little bit of a confusing thing for us here at Update. I don't have 99 Slayer, so I'm not doing the Soul Pokedex, so you guys can have a look at that at some point.
And I haven't gotten a kill, so yeah. Couldn't try it.
I don't know how I feel about this drop table. I don't think like you say, it's not enticing to you, but at the same time, with the things that it's dropping, it doesn't taste right. So
it's overall a bad drop table.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, the value isn't
like
it's bad.
Well, I mean
the value is okay.
I don't know what we're expecting from this. Bad. It's aimed to be a 2 minute boss kill. So.
Value will get better with time as the keys drop in price.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's possible.
But I mean, there's nothing in here.
It can't just ride on the tier 92 weapon.
Yeah, because there's nothing in here that you want to disassemble. You want to sell the nests, the dragon stones, the vital sparks. Dragon arrowheads are kind of useless because that's a tier 60 ranged weapon, and I'm sure that there's enough of those in the economy. Dragon plate legs and plate skirts, that's a nice chunk of GP. Rune bars and the herbs, well, we talked about that last week. We know what a problem those are. So, okay. Well, hopefully we're dead wrong on this, and maybe there will be some changes to the Magister to make it more enticing for people. Though, as I was saying in pre-show, if I had 115 Slayer, this kind of sounds like the kind of boss that I would like to fight, because it's a quick encounter, and it does have some mechanics that you need to learn, kind of like the Queen Black Dragon did. So maybe it's a higher level Queen Black Dragon in the way that you'd need 115 Slayer to kill it. I think that might be the category that we end up lumping this guy in.
Yeah, so. The boss seems like it would be really enjoyable to fight. Because
it's
there's
not
a lot of walls.
Like, it's not Telos or Araxor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, yes. And the best thing I've heard is, I mean, you just go in and you try to you just kill him as quickly as possible while sipping your restores and have your accuracy going. So, I mean, it's accessible in that way.
All right. Well, let's move on to the patch notes. We have a huge selection of Menaphos-related changes that were added this week. So feel free to stop me at any point once you realize what the trend is here. Jagex has added a whole new insect collection for you to complete. You access it via the Menaphos Collections Journal, which can be obtained from the Assistant Librarian if you have not received that yet. This is, of course, the same journal with the cats and the stones in there, the gemstones. So you can complete that little checklist. A bumper selection of books has been added to the Menaphos Library. Many were written by community members as part of a recent writing competition. Have fun in reading them. I went through the library. Some of them are pretty interesting. One of them was a limerick, which I found funny. So Jagex did manage to get the humor in, as was inserted by the community. And, you know, it'll be really interesting to see if any of these books play any role in future quests lore-wise, because you often know we do have to go get books for quests. So that could be neat. A daily challenge giver, Challenge Mistress Rashida, has been added to Menaphos, and she now stands near the Pharaoh statue by the Menaphos Lodestone. There's now also a fairy ring behind the Grand Pyramid. Fairy ring code is CKQ. There's also a player-owned house portal in the Port District behind Portmaster Kegs. Portmaster Kegs also has some additional transport options. He can transport you to Jal Savra and the Exiled Kalphite Hive, as well as Narda and the Heart and the Dominion Tower. The Pharaoh Scepter can now be used to teleport you directly to the Grand Pyramid. Jal Kabir is the pyramid's name for the Pharaoh Scepter and Scepter of the Gods teleport. You can now earn the Menaphos title if you reach Tier 10 City Rep. An Impling Collector has been added to the west side of the Pharaoh statue in Menaphos. This collector has the ability to toggle off the spawn of each type of Impling and the Guthixian butterflies around the city once you've unlocked that as a reputation reward. As an additional reward for Fight Club, you can now travel from Sophonim to Menaphos via the bridge. Quest NPCs in Menaphos now have the minimap and world map icon options. Azabo's toy stall is now open in the southeast corner of the Merchant District Marketplace. He offers similar services to Diango.
Unnecessary.
A summoning obelisk has been added in the house next to the marketplace. And we're going to stop right there for now. So what do you guys see?
It looks like there's a whole lot of Menaphos.
Yeah, it looks like they added berries to Menaphos.
But
with the insects.
I didn't think about that, but I'm glad you mentioned that, and that doesn't make me feel very good. Seeing it like that. I can see all these other features that they've added to Menaphos really have been added to make it as though it is a true hub city for a mid-level player, which, I mean, I think is fine and probably should have been in this update from the very beginning. Because if you're looking at the progression of a RuneScape character, you have various milestones that you'll be aiming for. Of course, the ultimate is Prif, right? I think we'd agree with that. Yeah. And, I mean, as a mid-level milestone, having Menaphos here as a city where you can have that be where you lodestone to, where you use the Grand Exchange and whatnot, just like we do in Prif, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think that if this makes the people who are mid-level use the city more and provides reason for them to come back, I think that is a great thing for the city. And it'll probably stave off some of the dead feelings that we were talking about a few weeks ago, and that after people completed what they were doing with it, they would leave. So I'm actually happy about this, but it should have been added at the very beginning, I think. You guys feel the same way?
Absolutely. This was supposed to have everything. Don't they have a list? Do they have a list to like check all this stuff? Like, because this should have all been, I mean, it's all pretty simple, and it's all quality of life. It should have been part of the expansion. Yeah. That's what makes it an expansion.
Yeah. And, you know, the most painful thing, though, is the insects, because this week we have the insects added. And, you know, that's something for people who don't want to do combat to collect. But on the other hand, we have the combat event for the people who are involved in that. So, I mean, it feels as though we have a high-level combat option here, but there's no high-level skilling, which I guess we were expecting from the very beginning of it. But I don't know. It just doesn't feel balanced in that regard. So, and I mean, sure, Slayers are going to be spending their time here, but I don't know if anyone who doesn't do the Magister or is using the Slayer dungeon is going to spend their time in Menaphos. What do you guys think after this? Excluding the mid-level people who will use this as their hub city.
I don't think it changes anything. It's nice. All that stuff is nice if you happen to be in Menaphos, but I don't. I mean, it helps you while you're getting your reputation, I guess. You know what I mean? But I don't see it fundamentally changing.
And I think most people who want to grind out the reputation by now, who are just doing it for the sake of grinding, are probably doing daily soul obelisk for that 20K a day.
Probably.
So, I don't know. How do you guys feel about the insects?
It's just another thing. I really don't have an opinion about it. It's just kind of bland, I guess.
All right. How about you, Tannis?
It's, yeah, I mean, it's okay. I could have done without that.
Yeah. You know? Like, I mean, the gems and the cats were enough. We didn't need more stuff to collect in Menaphos. It's not like we enjoy collecting that, I don't think, because, I mean, it is a simple click on something. Look, there's no real gameplay to it. You find it, you collect it, you note it down, you're done. So, I don't know. It just feels kind of one-dimensional and really wasn't needed here. And when you compare that to the Slayer Dungeon, which I think is incredibly novel, Magister, which I'm going to say is novel, but has reasons for people not fighting it currently, I think we're seeing the traditional disparity between the combat side of the game and the non-combat side of the game. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. So,
yeah, and there just needs to be more creativity put into the non-combat side.
Yeah. Okay, you hit the nail on the head there. More creativity on non-combat. That's a perfect way of saying it. All right. So continuing on with the patch notes, there's now a graphical rework to the Desert Swamp, which is east of Sophonim, which is good, considering that deals with one of the Elder Gods, so that's nice. The gold version of the Slayer Master title, provided you have already unlocked the silver version, now reads red, not silver. To unlock this, you must complete the Slayer Codex and beat Morvryn's Platinum Rush of Blood challenge. It's going to take some time for people to do that, I think. So, let's see. Cat the Cat has been rehomed near the Soul Altar.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that's there, but I just figured I'd throw that in.
Yeah.
Also, multi-hit special attacks such as the Dragon Dagger, Dragon Claws, and Armadale Battlestaff special attacks once again hit the correct number of times. I wonder how many times it wasn't hitting.
Yeah, I wondered that when I read those two.
Yeah. Block task can now be given by a Slayer Masker when the Slayer Mask for that type of creature is used. All right. That's good. Hassan can now be seen on the Alcarid Palace roof from multiple levels during Jack of Spades. Menaphos reputation now caps correctly on the tooltip. Not sure what that means.
I don't either.
The chance to receive a Soul Devourer's soul has been increased. You guys fighting Soul Devourers?
Yeah, and that's good because they're really hard to get.
Also, with this, there's now an increased chance to receive a creature's soul if the player has 200 million Slayer XP.
I would hate to have 200 mil Slayer and have to fight for these souls.
Right, because you're not getting XP, and I mean, no. The best you're getting is the drops. So
yeah, that'd be rough.
Yeah. A 3-second delay has been added between catching souls for the Slayer Codex. Why would there need to be a 3-second delay?
I couldn't figure that out too fast.
I couldn't figure that out either.
How do they catch them too fast?
Well, I think it has to do with needing the time to actually do the fill animation, because once they're filled, they're no longer stackable, but they're still all named the same. So something else has to be done to signify what's inside it.
Okay. All right. I think that makes sense. Simona. Continue.
No, go ahead.
All right. Simona now only assigns scorpions, desert lizards, and crocodiles if the level requirement to kill them in the Sophonim Slayer dungeon is met. All right. An issue that was preventing quest point total from being updated correctly until logging out after completing Crocodile Tears or Fight Club has been fixed. Excellent. I noticed this when this happened, and it was a little terrifying. Oh, God, I'm not going to get this quest point, and I'm going to be one short.
Oh, no.
It is no longer possible to change action bars by clicking the number or drag items to them when they're locked. The fail rate for crossing the vine agility shortcut at Herblore Habitat has been lowered. I actually failed this agility course this week. I was farming some herbs there to make the Juju farming potion, and I failed this. So
they should do that all around. If you're 99 agility, you shouldn't fall. You just shouldn't fall.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but talk about an update from the past that had staying power, though.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. This is still a good hunter method. It's a great way of getting those Juju potions. You need them for the perfect Juju potions. It's there. So not to dwell too much on things, but Herblore Habitat still works. Mammoth tusks are now 100% dropped from Acheron Mammoths, one of those Slayer creatures that was added back in November a year and a half ago. Which I guess is good, because, I mean, do you guys like those Slayer creatures, like the mammoths and whatnot?
You know, it's only two more spots. I mean, I'm glad that they're going to drop every time now, because that makes them somewhat of an option. But, yeah. You know, it's never going to be the Yak, you know. I think they probably should think about some kind of functionality added to it.
Yeah.
Because it's just not enough.
But, you know, the thing is, maybe there's too much Yaks being used and this one wasn't being used. So they just thought, okay, if people are doing this, they're going to fill the market with these tusks and they can be used to create the mammoth pouches. So.
Oh, but there's a real reason that people use Yaks so much.
Why is that? They're cheap?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what everyone does, double XP weekends. You can get your hides from, you know, up there on your islands. And
they take the crimsons.
Yeah, these take crimsons
so,
too.
So pretty.
Also, this could make mammoth worth doing because right now these tusks are going for 114K GE value.
Well, I mean, that's good. And some people don't mind them. I don't like them at all, but some people like them.
All right. There was also a undocumented thing that Jagex did. At the beginning of June, you guys remember that you could get the Semid gloves from Treasure Hunter again, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a case, a weird bug with some players where you would get gloves that were had no charge to them. So they were useless to you, even though they should have been fully charged. I was one of these people when I got those, and Jagex sent out a mail to everyone who was affected by this and said that we have given you a fully charged set of Samet gloves. You'll find it in your bank inventory or Diango. So this wasn't mentioned in the patch notes, but if you find a pair of Samet gloves in your bank, that would be why you found it. So,
huh.
Yeah, it's a nice little thing that you know, isn't documented, but Jagex did. And they sent JMod mail out to everyone who was affected by this. So,
yeah, at least they did that. I didn't get any of the gloves, so I was completely unaware. Blissfully unaware.
All right. The anti-poison totem can now be worn in the pocket slot with no defensive stats and reducing poison damage by 50% except in Pyramid Plunder. And it is also still possible to equip this in the offhand slot as before. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, no one, I think people have heard of the anti-poison totem, but I don't think it's an item that's used all that often.
I didn't know it only did 50%.
Yeah.
When I used to use it, it was 100. Maybe it goes down to 50 as a penalty to be in the pocket slot.
Oh, maybe. And, you know, that's the way that I read this as well when I was reading the patch notes, is that you only have the 50% when you're using it in the pocket slot. So that would be my guess with this, but of course, yeah, further testing will be required.
Yeah, as I ran through Pyramid Plunder for 99 thieving like 3 or 4 years ago, I just carried it with me in my hand. So
right. Okay.
I never got poisoned.
You ready for the controversial patch note of the week?
Let's do it.
The filters on the chat interface have been repositioned to better display them and increase usability. That shouldn't be controversial. So basically, the chat mod or chat box was changed this week. What you have now is you have a compressed display where on the left-hand side you have a filter, which allows you to choose what messages are displayed. And on the right-hand side, you have a gear that allows you to access all of the customization options for your chat box. So this removed, I want to say, probably maybe 8 to 10 buttons in total from the chat box. And it made it a lot more compressed. And I think it looks nicer now, and it serves its feature more as a chat box, right? Yes, no, maybe so.
I don't know. Does it have a toggle?
And that's where we're getting next. So after this, there were some questions about this, and Mod Shawnee made a forum post about this and said that the chat box is going to be changing up a little bit more in the future. And he included a mock-up of what it is going to look like. So they're going to be bringing back the chat buttons while also reorganizing them. And the game messages and broadcasts are kept in one section, whereas your multiple chat filters are going to be in another. And you're going to be able to minimize the chat box if you're happy with your options, giving you more room for your chat. And some of the other chat box options are going to be moved into the settings button, which retains the dynamic component that was used in this update. And this is also going to be able to allow the chat to be more streamlined. And there will be colored tooltips to indicate the option choices for each chat button. So he further says that with the chat box update on Monday, we made optimization changes which weren't mentioned and I think should be. Removed over 100 hard-coded buttons embedded into each interface. 100 hard-coded buttons embedded into all of the chat interface. Centralized all filter and action button code, including with legacy mode, which was previously hard-coded, so it all works from one location. Moved all of the chat filter settings into data structures rather than being set in script so that future additions can be made very quickly. Cleaned up other redundant code in the middle and removed some code that was duplicated in the client and server. And overall, removed 685 lines of repeated code. So, as of this time, there's no ETA for what's going to be added into this. So basically, there's going to be toggle options for the chat. And I mean, I don't know that this post was entirely needed here on this, because from what it sounds like, it sounds as though they're going to be bringing back menu options that were made to disappear. And what we see now was designed to be a streamlined chat box. So the question I'm asking is, why are we resorting to the level of a community forum post for chat box options? Maybe I'm just old-fashioned and this doesn't make sense to me, but a chat box seems like a fairly rudimentary thing that Jagex can design on themselves.
Yeah. It goes back to what you've been, you know, what you're talked about repeatedly. Be brave. I mean, come on. It's a chat box. Be brave. You don't need our input on that. Are we developers? Do we know how to make a UI?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
And I mean, I don't know why it was needed, because it feels as though that there's always some vocal segment of this population who are going to find an issue with whatever Jagex puts out. And I mean, there are probably some problems with the way the chat box was redesigned. I will admit that. And, you know, that is to be expected, I think, because we know Jagex doesn't have a good track record with making user interfaces. So I just want to say that even though what we're seeing here looks to be an improvement based on what the players did, there is no reason to ask us for this because we do not know the best way to interact with the chat. Jagex could probably get metrics about what buttons are used most and least and factor that into their design decisions on this chat system. Also, I think that it shows probably a lack of confidence that there needs to be a dev blog put out about a chat system. I mean, it just doesn't feel right. So.
Yeah. Well, people just like it's that change. I can't have change. Don't change it. But, I mean, it actually made it. There were problems, but I thought it made it a little better.
Oh, yeah. I like what we have now. And, you know, there are clear labels now for what each button does, and there's no guessing.
Yeah.
Which was the biggest problem before. So, I don't know. I think it's fine what they brought out this week, but, I mean, there's always room for change when it comes to user interfaces. Mr. Bistro, what do you think? Like, you think this is too far, or is this just what Jagex does to design their game now?
I think this is what they do to design their game now. It's a sad thing to say, but I don't know. I'm super tired of this. And it seems to just keep coming up.
Yeah.
And I think this is what happens when Jagex takes community involvement too far.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. And we're going to actually move on to that right now, if you guys are ready to.
Okay. Why not?
So this week we got the polls for the first batch of combat skill pets, as well as an update to the Vitalis drop for that Virago pet. So we'll start with Vitalis and Virago. So this is about adding a drop threshold. So they say, akin to how other boss pets are dropped, should the Vitalis drop from Virago have a threshold of 1,000 to improve the chance of dropping every 1,000 Virago kills? And note, you can only vote if you have 1,000 Virago kills, 18-plus boss pets, the final boss title, or a Vitalis unlocked. 68% say yes. I would have voted no in this one. How about you guys, if I had the ability?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this, because part of me says it's good that the community that's most affected by it is what is being pulled. But at the same time, I'm kind of surprised that they're voting yes, because you would think they would vote no. Like, to preserve their, you know...
preserve the prestige of that pet.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm really kind of confused because, I mean, it's a pretty limited pool of people that can vote. I don't know. I probably would have voted no. I don't know. I'm a long way from a Vitalis, so...
Yeah. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
I don't care about boss pet drops.
All right, fair enough. So that's poll number one, and the potential issue surrounding it is that it's limited to a very rare pool, people who have only fought it so far, and it doesn't give people who might fight Virago going forward the input on it, which, I mean, I think I would have lowered this a bit, because what's to say someone who is level 100 today in 2 months is not going to be wanting to fight Virago, right?
Yeah. And that's part of like what I'm kind of conflicted about the who was able to vote in this.
Yeah, totally agree. So there's that. And then we also have the options for the attack and constitution skill pet. So I'm just going to read through these right now, what we have for the attack skill pet. 30% are voting for Sifu, 11% Duke, 17% Monty, 13 Zauberschwert, 23% Tau, and 3% Don't Mind. I voted for Zauberschwert, not only because of the way it looks, but because I like that name. I like that name. Zauberschwert. Don't you guys?
Sure.
That's a little
sounds
bit
of, Russian.
No, it's actually German. The Schwert.
Oh, is it?
Zauberschwert, okay. Yeah.
Zauberschwert, okay.
Yeah. And you can see options of this in the voting menu. And, you know, it looks kind of wispy, and ultimately it's got swords following it. So it's going to be some swords following behind you. So it's going to look neat. Sifu is a dragon. Duke is a ferret musketeer. Monty is the python. No. What?
No, not a ferret musketeer.
Yep.
No.
That's what it is.
No.
Of course, Monty is a python.
Yeah.
Yes, and, that's awesome.
And Tao is a panda. So I voted for the Zauberschwert. Enchanted sword.
I want Monty.
Monty's python?
Monty Python. Yes. That'd be great.
I think that would that might win out.
No, Sifu is winning right now.
Why?
Right.
I don't know what Sifu is, but
uncultured.
Yeah, it's like a dragon. So there's that. And, of course, these were all submitted by players with the player mock-ups here. So nice that Jagex actually did that for the players. Then, of course, we have the Constitution skill pet. Options here are 21% for Amy, 5% for Dr. Imp Pain, 5% for Hertz, 35% for Morty, 30% for Eliza, and 2% for I Don't Mind. In this one, I voted for Eliza. Basically because Constitution deals with your health, and this one appears to be a fairy doctor that will look over you. So that's why I voted for Eliza here. So what would you guys vote for? Amy is a red panda. Dr. Impain is, of course, an imp with a huge syringe. Hertz the healer is looks like a Jad-type creature. And Morty appears to be a lizard. So.
I don't know. I don't know.
I would vote I don't care, but in spite of Rick and Morty, which I'm assuming is why that's ranked so high.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
I probably would have gone with that too.
All right.
Me too.
Okay. They would have got me. So are you guys ready for the next part about these polls that throw everything into whack or out of whack?
Yeah.
So on July 4th, Mod Kelpie tweets, "Today we will be restarting the combat pet polls." And this is, of course, linking to a Reddit thread. Kelpie says, "Hey, everyone. Quite rightly, the integrity of these polls has been brought into question. Therefore, today we will close the current combat pet polls and restart them from fresh with a further I don't mind option, which will be the default option." All right. So main issue here is that these polls started out in the I don't mind was not the default option. So that led some to believe that people would just click OK and vote without changing their vote, changing what the voting option is. Unfortunately, I didn't manage to grab a screenshot of what these polls were before the start of it. So I don't have any info to say if the results are the same or not. But furthermore, the poll will end on Monday, next Monday. And if no option has more than 50% of the vote, the top two will be re-polled in a runoff. And after the next update, the I don't mind option will be replaced with a skip and there will be no auto-selected option. Okay, so this, I think, calls into integrity the entire usage of polls in the 2014 Power to the Players era. Because you guys will recall that in 2014, we had polls that had default options selected. And if this was a problem then, is a problem now, it was surely a problem back then. And in fact, I think I remember covering some of these polls and saying that.
Yeah. So, no, I remember that. I remember listening to the podcast, and that was always striking to me that there were so many people who would pick I Don't Mind.
Yeah. And, you know, another problem with these polls that, you know, anyone who has a basic grasp of statistics will realize is that these polls should be listed in alphabetical order by their names, because we don't know what the order is right now. It could be random. We don't know that. So I think it should be alphabetical, because it's just like any time you step into a real-life voting booth. In most places, the candidates are listed in alphabetical order or by party. So here, I think we should have some semblance of how these options are listed, because, I mean, Sifu is winning the attack option, and that's on top, and Amy is in third place for the constitution option. So I just don't think that these polls have integrity anymore, because if you need to restart a poll, that's a bad sign, really bad.
Well, I don't understand to what end. I mean, you know, we were talking pre-show that you about were they trying to get a certain answer, and if they're not trying to get a certain answer, then to what end did this happen? Like, why?
I don't know. I don't know.
It doesn't make sense. I was just scratching my head because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean,
I notice Shane is at a loss for words.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often.
Because we had so many options of what was going on here that in 2014 that shaped the way RuneScape went, how many of these options could be called into integrity?
And Aquarium. Sorry, I had something in my throat there. You know nobody voted for that shit. That's what I thought all along.
Right.
At the same time, you know, hey, if they screwed it all up, we got Prif out of it, so forgiven. You know? Got Prif.
Apparently in the first round for the attack pet, Sifu and Tao were tied. So you can tell how much of a difference there is.
Yeah. See, and I wonder, like, if you don't go and actively vote, would it have just counted the I don't mind as a vote?
No.
Okay. Well, then it just doesn't make sense. It's just like cutting off your nose to spite your face. I don't get it.
Oh, and then Maude Osborne says, when someone asked, what about hiding the results until the poll has finished? He says, we'd be accused of manipulating the vote.
They would be. Yeah, I mean, he's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't see how a major update can be put into game with poll like this now unless there is a clear documentation set created on how the polls are worded, how the options are ordered, and what voting characteristics there will be for if no one gets more than 50%. Because did we have one update in 2014, Power to the Players, that had a runoff? I don't think we did.
They had to do Invention twice. Remember?
Why don't they just hide the results and then put in like the game's terms of service that they don't manipulate the results?
Because the community do? Based on what we've had here, it wouldn't be believed.
Well, if it's in the terms of service, it doesn't matter.
It still wouldn't be the belief.
Ugh.
I know. That's where we're at. Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, obviously there's nothing to say. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just utterly baffling. And let's just remove the polling center from the game now. Like, come on.
Yeah. I think that's
it has zero credibility after this. Can we agree with that?
Should let players make custom made polls and put them into like Clan Citadel use or something.
Oh boy, that's pretty funny. That's really funny. Anyways, elite skilling outfits are back on Treasure Hunter this week, so you'll have a chance from the 5th through the 10th to get some of the outfits. The 5th was the Eternal, the 6th is the Shark outfit, the 7th is the Demine Simulacrum outfit for Divination, 8th is Camouflage for Thieving, 9 is Garageo for Dungeoneering, and on the 10th you'll have a chance to get pieces from all of the outfits. And as a reminder, these are the outfits such as the Rune Ethereal, Shark outfits, and Divine outfit that can be made using Invention now in-game. So not so much of an emphasis to complete these outfits as there was in the past, but still nice to have a chance to picking a few of these up over the weekend. So, all right. Ready to move on to our question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is from Tyler. Given the recent Constitution and Attack pet polls and ensuing drama, I'm curious to know which ones are your favorites. I personally really enjoy the Red Panda Constitution pet, as it would cause for the inclusion of a new type of animal to the RuneScape world, increasing the biodiversity of the cute little critters that we are seeing running around behind players. Happy podcasting from Tyler. Okay, so you guys both, Mr. Beastro, you said you don't care, right?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Tyler, I really don't care.
All right. Tanis.
You know, that would have been probably a close second, for that skill was the Red Panda. Cause it would be different. Yeah. But...
And he's currently in third right now.
Yeah.
You know, I just, okay. Maybe I'll.
What do you think, Shane?
I think I could probably change my vote on that one to the panda because, I mean, I don't know. In hindsight, if I want a fairy following me around if I get the Constitution pet. But.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
If it was a fairy that acted like the fairy from Ocarina of Time, but red. Yeah, then I'd get it.
Well, its wings are red.
That's not close enough.
Okay. And, of course, I'm not changing my attack skill pet because I don't think you can beat the name Zabashwort.
Well, Monty Python's pretty good.
I never saw that movie.
It's a show.
Oh,
it's,
I thought it was
but
a movie.
It's cheeky, okay. British. Like, it's so Jagex. They so should have went with just don't ask us. Just go with that. They're going to be heartbroken when it doesn't win.
Yeah, they've made movies like The Holy Grail. I think that's what you're thinking of.
Oh, probably. But, probably.
Yeah, they were a show.
Well, I mean, maybe there's another way to add the red panda to the game. I don't know. But I think Tyler wants everyone to vote for the red panda. If you guys are hearing this and want to throw your vote away, you can vote for the red panda. So
I will vote for the red panda just for you, Tyler.
There you go. All right. If you guys want to send questions in, update.rsbnb.com/ask, or the phone number is 571-57BNB, which is 571-572-2632. We also take direct messages on Twitter, the big Twitter bird, at RSBNB. All right. So, moving into tech news right now, Microsoft confirms layoff reports, reorganization in the company affecting thousands of people. The impact has been put anywhere between up to 3,000, but potentially closer to 5,000. CNBC reported the smaller number of 3,000, adds that around three-quarters of the cuts will occur outside of the U.S. Microsoft isn't saying anything specific yet on numbers. They only confirm that they began the process of informing employees about job losses. And the only thing we know is that it'll be in the thousands. The main reason for this is, quote, Microsoft is implementing changes to better serve our customers and partners. And today we are taking steps to notify some employees that their jobs are under consideration or that their positions will be eliminated. Like all companies, we evaluate our business on a regular basis, and this can result in increased investment in some places and from time to time redeployment in others. So the idea behind this and what people are theorizing is that it's a part of a reorganization that shuffles the sales team around, redirecting focus towards more cloud-based services and shifts up sales to be enterprise and consumer-based, including small and medium consumers. So, you know, I think it's no surprise that Microsoft has a huge focus on cloud services these days. That is, services that you don't necessarily need to buy physical hardware for or physical software. And Microsoft needs to do this because their new business clients want the cloud services, whereas their traditional clientele in the enterprise used to focus on things like government, oil, and gas companies as well. So, yeah, quite interesting to see Microsoft doing this. And I think it, do you guys think it signals a shift in the way it works for a, for what enterprise is going to be looking for?
I think we've already been seeing the shift. And I don't think it would be correct for anyone to say that what Microsoft's doing in order to better their business is wrong, as their stocks don't lie about it.
Right. And I mean, I think at this point, Microsoft has pretty much branded themselves as a huge cloud service company, in addition to its little forays into hardware, including the Surface line of laptops, Xbox. But everything else Microsoft offers these days is practically a service. Even Microsoft Office has become a service. So. And I mean, if you look at, like you said, the stock prices, they haven't seen any real huge declines here, but, they're not doing as good as other companies.
If you go back like a few months, they're still trending up, so they're not losing anything.
Yeah. It's probably a preemptive move more than a reactive move. And I mean, when you think about it, it's not that they are largely outside the U.S., which would line up with the sales mentality that people are thinking of, right? So, all right. Anything else left on that one?
I just hate to see people lose their jobs.
Yeah, well, I mean, given the fact it's Microsoft, they might be able to be reshuffled inside the company to different divisions. Microsoft sometimes does have a tendency of doing that. Yeah. So,
and is it like, so with things moving to the cloud, is there any concern? Like, should we have like any concern at all on just security whatsoever with the ability of that to be hacked?
Well,
I'd say you might almost be more comfortable if it's in the cloud than if it were on your own.
Right.
Personal device.
Because it's controlled by Microsoft in that way. And if anything ever does happen to Microsoft in the cloud, that will be a huge, huge issue, and it will be fixed very quickly. And I can imagine that data redundancies are there and whatnot. Yep. So data is going to be fine if you're storing it. As for personal information, well, any company has that risk. So.
Okay. Well, that makes sense then. I just wasn't sure. As a layman, I was curious what you guys thought.
Yeah, that's a fair question, and I think looking to the cloud is a good thing to do in this era. So,
yeah, from what I've come to know, it seems like companies, if they have an option to push personal information off of their own shoulders so they don't have to worry about it to someone else. That's what they want to do.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to be the ones responsible for if something was to go wrong.
Yep, makes sense. All right, next tech news story is for you guys, the gamers out there. Grand Theft Auto V modding tool Open 4 is back, but the Liberty City project that was attached to it is dead on arrival, mainly due to IP issues. Open 4 was a modding tool that was for Grand Theft Auto V, but there was some legal action with Rockstar, and this resulted in Rockstar shutting down this modding tool. And I think a large portion of people who play GTA 5 were really upset about this.
Yeah, this was, I mean, so the whole story was kind of unfortunate. A matter of just a couple weeks after the CEO of Take-Two had said they were under monetizing GTA Online, Take-Two comes out and does a cease and desist to Open 4 and, you know, several other modding tools using – and it's not an excuse. I mean, it's legitimate, but it didn't work in Open 4's case. But they said this is giving people the ability to hack online. They don't want anyone messing with that. They sell their shark cards. You can't have people coming in there just spawning money or being – you know, just disruptive because there were things that people could do to other players. So that's bad for business. That's no good. But Open 4 is only for single player mods. It's not supposed to be online at all. Like if you try to go online, your game will just crash. So I don't know what the back and forth was with that anyway. When Open 4 did the, or when Rock or Take Two, there's a lot of players in this story.
Yeah,
Take
I can
Two
tell.
does the cease and desist. Rockstar comes out and they make a real kind of bland statement at first, and the community like erupts. And GTA 5 was like, I mean, I had over, I think it was like a 93% rate on Steam, and within a few days, it has now. I mean, it dropped. I mean, it just dropped like a stone. We're talking like 60%. It's gone up since the new changes happened because finally Rockstar got Take-Two to back off, and Rockstar has always been pretty supportive when it comes to modding. It's never been a problem in the past, and so they basically were like, okay, you know, single player mods can go on as long as they adhere to our modding policy, and you can't bring in assets from their other games. So that's why the Liberty City got shut down. And, you know, I mean, hey, I think that was great. I think Rockstar saved it in the end because their reputation was on the line too. And it really sucked for them because you can't have that kind of bad publicity when they took so long and have built such a good reputation with gamers.
Oh yeah.
And they've got, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2 coming out. There's going to be an online component with that. That's going to be a huge game. You couldn't have this going on. So so good news, you know, you can once again mod your GTA 5 game. You can put your cars that you want. You can fly around like you're Iron Man, you know? I mean, it's just oh, it's just fun. Like I literally did not buy – I had that game on my wish list. I had it for the console, but I always wanted it on PC. I had it for my wish list and waited for the summer sale. This all happened right around that time. I'm like, I'm not buying it now. Like, I'm not buying it. If I can't mod it, I don't want it.
Well, I guess you can't buy it now then.
No. 2 days before the summer sale ended is when they made this announcement.
Oh,
the
okay. Back. So did you end up buying it?
Oh, you know it. Quick as my fingers could go, we were buying that game. Yeah. So story has a happy ending, really, you know? I mean, I think everybody benefited. And I know it's a hard knock for Open 4 because they had been working for – they had been working on that Liberty City mod for a really long time.
Yeah.
I mean –
yeah. And see, that's the thing. I mean, ordinarily, if it's going to be like that, you probably don't want to invest too much in a mod like that. But they did, knowing this was going to happen, and it did. So I think, I mean, it's unfortunate, but that is the way it is. And, you know, I give Rockstar a lot of credit for this. I'm not normally a fan of mods, but, you know, the fact that they opened up and are allowing mods on their single-player GTA 5 platform, I think that says a lot, and maybe says a lot about the way that game industries are going these days.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think people really felt like it was – that was like gouging players. And the problem is that they've been around for so long, and it adds so much to the game. It's so much creativity. I mean, there's whole YouTube channels that's based on nothing but GTA 5 mods. I mean, it's just –
arguably what's left for that particular game being so old now.
Yes, and it keeps it alive, you know. I mean – no, and you know what Rockstar could do? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're doing this behind the scenes, but if Open 4 made a really awesome Liberty City map and buy it, you've never released single player DLC. Hell, I'll buy it. Give me a chance. Give the community a chance. We'll buy it. You know what I mean? Like, they're just, you don't have to like totally take it away, but I don't know. I'm happy. I give Rockstar credit, and I'm happy it's back, because, you know, I mean, I'm cruising around with Airwolf, man. Airwolf in the General Lee, and like Lamborghinis. Oh, so cool. And it's taught me a hell of a lot about like being able to do this, because I didn't know how to do this 2 days ago. And so to get that deep into your files and you know, change things around, I think it's been pretty cool.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm glad you're enjoying yourself. And
oh yeah,
be interesting to see what players come up with this. So, all right. Final piece of tech news: Samsung's exploding Note 7 has been, of course, repackaged as the Galaxy Note Fan Edition. The phone went on sale this week in Korea. They say it has a perfect safety with the new battery and will cost 700,000 South Korean won, which is roughly 470 Great British pounds, approximately two-thirds of the original asking price for the Note 7 when it goes on sale Friday. The Note Fan Edition will be made from salvaged parts and will be limited to just under 400,000 units initially, with overseas sales planned to be determined later.
That cracks me up. When you said that, and then you said for opening up to the Korean market, I was like, are we sending North Korea? Like, are these cell phone bombs? Like, what is going on here? I mean, seriously.
This all started in late August and early September last year when the phone started exploding, totaled a few Jeeps, and it eventually got to the point where Samsung stopped sales and recalled the entire line and basically accepted it as a lost year on the Note end. And it, of course, also went to various transport regulations as well, in that there were notifications when boarding a plane, notifications at airport security that you could not travel with a Note 7. So, of course, anyone who still has one of these still should return it to Samsung. I hope everyone out there who did have one has returned it. But, you know, you got to give Samsung credit for repackaging an old device like this and calling it, of all things, the Fan Edition. Like, that name, I don't know. I don't know what it is about good that on name. Them. It just gives me a kick.
The Fan Edition, I know.
Also, a note from the environmental side of this, environmental activists in South Korea have pressured the South Korea company here to reuse electronics parts to reduce waste. So Samsung said that the Note FE is part of its effort to minimize waste. And I think that's something that a lot of people forget, is that when you buy a smartphone or any kind of computer these days that is, you know, an all-in-one piece, you can't remove the battery, you can't access the components, it is expensive to recycle these. everything from the aluminum casing outside to the silicon and, you know, trace amounts of heavy metals used in the chips and processor boards, they need to be recycled carefully. And the biggest offender is, of course, the battery. So I guess this is me just saying, if you have a phone out there, you know, that you're not keeping anymore, keep it safe and don't just throw it in the garbage, because you don't want to be throwing these batteries out. They're really bad. So it's good that Samsung is doing this, and we talked a couple months ago about Apple's recycling options that they have for recycling devices as well. So if the Samsung Fan Edition or Samsung Galaxy Note Fan Edition comes to North America, would you guys be interested in purchasing?
No.
No.
In fact, I'm actually, and I can't believe that I'm saying this, but I'm moving away from Samsung and I'm moving towards the Google products.
Oh, not iOS. Too bad.
No. Heck no. Why in the hell would I ever move over there?
One day, perhaps. But anyways, it'll be interesting to watch what the sales look like on this device and see if it makes its way to North America. All right. So let's talk a bit about June, and specifically our Informer Roundup. You guys both have your Informer articles out. Mr. Bistro's Letter to Angry Players, which came out last month. That was an enjoyable read, as well as Tanis to JX Slate 120. I think you guys were both on point with that. Colton was in with the first part of a series on the Desert Pantheon and the Minor Gods. And Alex talked about the graphical beautifulness of Menaphos and what exactly Menaphos ended up being, which we all know the answer to that by now. We also had the guest article from Parnassius, Menaphos, the good, the bad, the awesome, and the very, very ugly. Was Magister the good, the bad, the awesome, or the very, very ugly this week, you guys?
Depends on how you're approaching the update, really. I think it would be
neutral.
Good. Yeah, it's good for the play style. It's bad for everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's closer to good than bad, but it missed the mark. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. I can't call it good because that's, yeah, I don't know. It's not bad, though.
All right. Also, June was Apple WWDC month, where Apple announces software changes and platform changes. I wrote something entitled Make Apple Great Again, 2017 and Beyond.
which
is something they need.
It's a good article, Shane.
Yeah. Yes. And, of course, we had the Slayer Skill of the Month with which, oh my God, that was a impressive competition. So we start off the month, and the Lion is in first place for the first week with Thieves and yourself, Tan, is battling for second.
Yeah.
You guys looked like you almost tied one day. Then you and Thieves continue to battle it out while Lion maintains a linear trajectory. Then, on the 10th of the month, Thieves goes away for 12 days, and you take second place.
Yeah.
Then, meanwhile, while Thieves is away, Parnassius continues, and Parnassius takes third place, overtaking Thieves. So Thieves has fallen back to fourth at this point by the 23rd when he returned to the game. Then Thieves kicks it into top gear, and oh my, he just shoots up like a rocket from the 23rd to the 30th, moving past Parnassius, past Utanis, past the Lion, to take first place with 24.1 million XP gained, gaining 3 million XP over the Lion.
Yeah, that's good on him.
Good on him. This is the definition of what what a truly competitive skill of the month is. And I realize there's a bunch of you guys down below in the lower half of this group, but oh my, this must have been intense.
Yeah, it's such a marathon. It's what ended up killing me. The last week, I just
I couldn't do it. I wanted to, but like I got so burnt on Slane, I couldn't. It's like I'm used to competing. But like my clan competitions are like a week, and a whole month, man. It hurt. I'm not gonna lie.
No.
Well, but so much experience did great. In one day.
That how much in one day did he get?
It looks like it's
5.5 million on the last day.
Yeah, that's significant.
Oh boy! Well, completely opposite. We do have a magic skill of the month, which has 4 competitors, and I guess everyone's burnt out from thieving.
Oh man! Yes.
Parnassius 1.5, Xblades 957k, Magic King 687k, and Flash 318k. So a nice little intimate race there. So, anyways.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
good. Very. Very high energy and stimulating for people involved. All right. You guys ready to do some achievements this week?
Yes.
Yep.
All right. What do we got?
Well, there's Ezerap with 120 Dungeoneering on July 5th. Tyler with 120 Invention on July 4th. Ali the Wise with 99 Runecrafting on July 3rd. And Arient with 99 Runecrafting on July 3rd.
And then we have Arient with 99 Fletching on July 2nd. AC Fair with 99 Fishing on July 1st. And Taurogi?
Yeah, something like that. Taurogi something.
Taurogi, okay. 99 Thieving on June 30th. Congratulations, everybody. Nice work.
Nicely done. All right. You guys ready for a pick of the week?
Yes.
All right. So this goes kind of beyond the realm of gaming, beyond tech, beyond RuneScape, and into the real world.
Okay.
So I think it goes without saying that one of the biggest shockers to the vast majority of people last year was the election of President Trump. So
where are we going?
Shane article.
Oh no! What are we doing?
So this is a book called "Understanding Trump." It is written by former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, and this book is something I think that if you're interested in what happened in the U.S., or maybe you're just a little bit baffled about what's going on there, or you just want to know more about the guy who is currently president, you could probably pick up quite a few good hints from this book. It's broken down into 3 parts. The first part is about Trump himself. The second part is about his rise and the campaign, and the third part is about what his administration will potentially look like. And this goes into, you know, explaining a lot of things about why he does what he does, why he is who he is, and why everyone missed that he was going to win. So I bring this to you guys as a pick of the week, not because I'm trying to push a specific agenda or something. We don't do that at this podcast. I don't think we have an agenda when we come and record this show, do we?
Mm-mm.
No. So the thing behind this is that I feel that there's a lot of understanding that needs to happen, and there's a lot of confusion, I think, still about what's happening in the U.S. And this is a good start to understanding what's going on there. You can find it on Amazon, bookstores, Kindle, you name it, everywhere. Just search for Understanding Trump. It's a good read. I think it's balanced. It's got pretty much any time a news article is cited or a source is cited, it's got footnotes at the end of the book, so you can fact check it if you want. And I always like it when books do that because, I mean, how else are you to know that the author's not just making stuff up, right? So, The book is Understanding Trump, and that's the pick of the week.
Alrighty then.
So, might be a good gift for some people at the end of the year, depending.
Yeah, like only if you don't live here, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a question of you know, books don't hurt anyone, right?
Yeah, no, and, books are fine. I'm not a fan of Newt Gingrich, and I don't know. I'm not a fan.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Books don't hurt people. People hurt people with books.
Yeah, we can throw the book at people, right?
That's true. We can. Oh, jeez.
All right. So, what have we been doing in RS? Start with
Slayer.
You, Janice. Or Mr. Bistro can go first.
Yeah, go ahead, Bistro.
Slayer, filling up my codex. I'm kind of filling out the lower end of them, which I think might be dumb because I'm just about out of my what are they? Slayer monster Pokeball things. Yeah. I'm just about out of those, and my Slayer points need to be revitalized before I can start buying more again. But that's what I've been doing.
And you know, with the lower level ones, you get the souls quicker, so that's good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's a nice accomplishment when you get that done. Me, I haven't done too much. I've kind of snuck in and done a task here and there, and still grinding a little bit of Reputation. So yeah, other than that, I've been working on modding my GTA 5.
Oh, good. Well, as for me this week in terms of RS, as I mentioned, I was making Juju farming potions, ran out of those. I made some when I started off 120 Slayer, finally ran out. So been doing that. And, you know, other than that, just looking for a way to maybe, I don't know. I feel like with the release of 120 Slayer, I should give it another go. But it just hasn't stuck with me. So I've been looking to try and find a way to make myself enjoy Slayer. So.
Well, there's plenty of things you could do. I personally just enjoyed, like, camping, stuff that was fun to kill for a while. Like, I'd try to get, ice skikes or desert skikes a lot, or just sit at Aberrant Spectres and get a whole bunch of herbs.
Okay. But, yeah, and see, that's the part I don't like about Slayer, is that you end up with all those boss creatures that are so lucrative like that, that it kind of takes away those, points. And I don't know, maybe I'm just too ethical, but all right, well, and there was one other thing. I don't know what got me doing this, but I was attempting to figure out how the damage and ability damage in the hero tab are calculated based on the equipment that you're wearing. So if anyone out there knows how these are calculated, please do let me know. I looked at some resources that appeared to be on the RS wiki, but those equations didn't look to be correct. So if anyone out there knows how the damage figures calculated in the hero interface work, please do let me know, because I would love to know about that. I don't know what got me on that. It's not like I'm starting a project or anything where those are needed, but it was just something that trying to get into Slayer, I was trying to maximize some things and find some calculations. So you guys ever look into those, or do you guys just go for whatever provides you the highest number?
I've never really looked into them.
All right.
Yeah, I haven't really looked into them either.
All right. Fair enough then. Well, with that being said, that's it for this episode of Update. Thank you both for being here for the last month and a bit. You guys have really done a great job on this Metaphos coverage, and I think the listeners will agree with that.
Oh, well, yeah. Thanks, Shane. I've had a blast. It's been great.
thanks to the community. I've had a warm welcoming, and I just want to throw something back to one of the other co-hosts, kind of a legacy thing. But as far as I know, Earth has been saving up. He's got around like 957. So Earth is for you.
No.
There you go.
Oh, you just had to do that.
I did. I didn't forget.
Wow. Okay. And of course, Mr. Bistro, it was nice having you back after we did your quarter and a bit at the tail end of last year. So
it's been amazing.
Yeah. Yay.
All right. Well, with that being said, we do have some off RuneScape content planned for the month of July. We'll be back with, you know, full RS discussions and whatnot in August. We don't intend to discuss too much this month aside from the achievements update when that arrives, because, I mean, we're just going to try something. So we do have a couple of episodes lined up this month that are going to be very interesting that I can tell you about right now. One of them is going to be focusing in on Overwatch, which is another game that we're all very fond of here at RSBNB. And the other one is Star Trek Online, because we've never done a podcast on those two games as if they were our core meat of the matter. So one week will be dedicated to Overwatch, another week will be dedicated to Star Trek Online this month, and the other week will probably be filled in with achievements discussion and any other RS stuff that comes up that week. So going to do things a little bit differently this July, but we'll be back in August. The co-hosts are already lined up for August, and they can't wait to be on the show. So with that being said, awesome. We'll see you next week, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye.